Welcome to the Simply Authentic Podcast, where we hope to inspire you to dream bigger, empower you to take charge of your own life, and challenge you to be your most authentic self. To the Simply Authentic Podcast. I'm Tanya Murfin.
And I'm Angie Mullings. And today we have a guest in studio. It is Dr. Brandon Grimminger. He is Executive Vice President of Clinical Operations and a licensed clinical psychologist. He's with Burrell. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Well, why don't you just get us kicked off and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your journey in psychology.
Sure. So my journey in psychology, I am a licensed psychologist and have been practicing a little over 10 years now in the state of Missouri. I have been living here in the southwest Missouri area for now a little over 20 years. So I moved down here from the St. Louis area to go to get my undergraduate degree at Missouri State University. They changed names while I was there to Missouri State University. So graduated from MSU and then had the pleasure of getting my master's and doctoral degree from the Springfield Institution, School of Professional Psychology at Forest Institute. Also met my wife here in Springfield. So she and I were on similar paths in getting our undergraduate degree at Missouri State, but we don't think had any classes together, and then ended up meeting each other when we were working in a psychiatric hospital here in town, fell in love, got married, and fell in love with the area and decided to stay here.
Awesome. Great love story there.
Yeah. So has your time in Springfield all been with Burrell then?
It hasn't. No. So I... had a number of different training experiences in a lot of environments, which was great. You know, I had the luxury of learning in various environments from healthcare to hospital, and then ended up post-graduation working in private practice. So I was working in private practice with a group of about 30 folks for a few years, and then we joined Burrell in 2017. So we brought over around 30 providers or so into that organization and joined their outpatient team in late 2017.
Okay.
And what does a normal day or a normal week maybe look like for you?
Sure. It's different than it was in 2017. So in 2017, I was doing full-time practice. And so about half of my time was in psychological evaluations. The other half was doing therapy across the lifespan. Did some forensic evaluations in the jail setting, but most of it was in a private practice clinical space. And then around 2017 is when I started shifting into an administrative position. And so at that time, most of my 40 or 40 plus hours was spent with clients doing the work and doing the paperwork associated with the work. And now I'm doing mostly administrative duties, so overseeing some programs at Burrell and some wonderful teams that work for them.
Great.
And why Burrell then? Why go to Burrell in 2017?
Sure. So at the time, it was actually the decision of the practice partners.
Okay.
So we got to go along for the ride. But it was a really good decision because we were co-located here in town. Our practice had offices throughout the state, as does Burrell. You know, has offices throughout our southwest region and also central region in Kansas City, too. We were made up of counselors and psychologists, and so we were doing mostly evaluations and therapy work. And then we would refer out for the complementary services. And so if someone needed psychiatry services or community support services, housing, some of those things, we were referring to Burrell. And so it was a better together type of a scenario. If we can join forces, we can, you know, create more consultation opportunities, less loneliness for our providers, you know, more connections, more services, and a direct line into that continuum of care. It really just provides a better experience for the client if as many things can be handled within company or within house as possible, and if those providers have a seamless way of communicating with each other, usually the outcomes are more positive. And so it was a really interesting experience for me, having been just down the road from this company and really not knowing the full extent, you know, even though I was practicing for many years of what they were doing and the positive impact there. And so what's been nice and what I really love about Burl is that was also around the time that there were some leadership changes. Dr. CJ Davis came in as a new CEO, and we rebranded, and our marketing approach is a little bit different, very much more in the community and doing outreach mm-hmm. and outspoken about the importance of mental health. And, you know, so I hope less and less over time others' experience was maybe like mine was, and knowing the surface level of everything that Burl was doing for the community. And we really want everybody to understand the full extent of every option that's on the buffet, because it is a really big buffet in terms of what we're able to offer the community.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a little bit, just everything that Burl does offer. But I know from the Greater Springfield Board of Realtors, building is right there next to Burl on Primrose. And just from the outside looking in, I'm thinking, goodness, they're just expanding all the time. It just seems like there's more and more going on there. And I am seeing more of Burl in the community. I'm seeing Burl sponsor things, and just having a more being more visible in the community. So that's great, and I thank you guys for that.
Good. Yeah, the work's not done. You know, it's sort of like when they're interviewing folks after the Super Bowl, you know, there's another Super Bowl. You know, mm-hmm. the work is going to continue. Yep. We've got to continue to normalize and continue to be present. You know, it's not something that we can just achieve and coast. You know, we'll have to continue to talk about this and make sure it's normalized for everybody in the community.
Yeah. So on that note, on the podcast, we have kind of taken a focus on mental awareness, and Suicide mm-hmm. Prevention Month is September.
Yes.
And so that's one of the reasons you're here, to make us all understand it a little better. And I think that the mental health persona out there that we've all kind of grown up hearing about, knowing, I feel like in recent years, because we've had many stars and athletes and Hollywood people talk about their mental health and their mental illness and maybe addiction with that as well. So I think we're all wanting to normalize this conversation, and that it would be okay for any of us to call a friend and say, I don't feel right today. Mm-hmm. So coming from your perspective, how can we make that a more normal conversation and make us feel like it's not supposed to be talked about anymore, that it's just normal? Just like I woke up and my shoulder hurts today. Mm-hmm. I can complain about that too, you know?
Yes. Yes. I think what's important, I think, to weave something into culture. So if we wanted to make it part of our everyday practice and our routine and ritual, that there has to be a commitment and there has to be a regularity to that. Mm-hmm. One of the good things that came out of the pandemic was a reduction in stigma around mental health. So like conversations like we're having today, you know, seeing positive stories about mental health in the media, and having folks being very outspoken about their personal and lived experience, it just offers more opportunities for other people to connect and know they're not alone. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think a few of the things that we're trying to do is to really integrate that into as many cultures as we can, or that we are invited into. So for instance, there are some really great programs that we can get into the school setting. So as often as we can be preventative and provide education, we absolutely want to do that. Mm-hmm. Reactive is okay if we're reacting to an opportunity to still keep that person alive. If a person has died by suicide, we don't have the same opportunity to be reactive. So as often as we can be proactive and upstream, getting into the middle schools, we have what we call the One Initiative, which is an opportunity to partner with businesses and organizations. And the reason that we started that is it's an opportunity for us to go into a captive audience, a workforce that's able to identify what they need. And most businesses that we've been working with the last few years identify that they needed basic training, so just basic fluency skills. So I hear this in the media, I hear everything that's going on, how do I ask about it? And when I hear those keywords, what do I do next? And so a lot of organizations that partnered with us just needed that one-on-one training, and that's great. You know, we want to have as many therapeutic helpers in the community as possible. Mm-hmm. It's great if a few of them do also go get their license and want to help us practice and serve people in therapy, but as many mm-hmm. people that are comfortable with, when I recognize these signs, I know next to contact 988 or contact a professional, and then they can take it from there. That's what's going to help us save more lives. But really integrating it into the culture. So does your business do a training on mental health and wellness? Is mental health identified in your sick time policies as something that's acceptable? Are there, you know, is it visible in your space that you know what to do when the warning signs show up? There's interesting research that came out. I mentioned 988. So this is the behavioral health equivalent of 911. Mm-hmm. It is about to be 2 years old. And so the idea behind this is it's not just for suicide. So it's a lifeline for any crisis, a self-defined crisis. And in some of the recent surveys that we look at, it's a little less than 20% of adults in America have heard about 988 mm-hmm. and what its purpose is. Mm-hmm. So that tells us we need to continue to educate. Yeah. And normalize that when you call 988, that doesn't mean that we're going to be contacting the hospital or authorities to come to your house. In fact, at least for us, that happens less than a percentage of the time mm-hmm. for thousands and thousands of calls. Typically, we are stabilizing, we're providing resources and normalizing that call. But it's kind of like going to the gym if you haven't for a long time. It can be scary to make that call if you don't know what's going to happen on the other side. Yep. But they welcome mm-hmm. practice calls. And so sitting with people and saying, like, let's make a practice call to 988 together. And let them know we're just trying this out. And so when that professional answers the phone, they can walk you through what to expect when you do need to call for yourself or somebody that you care about. A local leader that we met with, it was really interesting when we were saying, how can we help your business? You know, do you think that they need training or do you want to do an awareness event? And the question that they asked was, how come all of the commercials you see say, if you need help, reach out? So we put the onus on the person that's hurting to reach out if they need help. Why don't those commercials say, if you want to learn how to help someone else, contact the following? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we as an industry can't be entitled and arrogant enough to think that everyone is going to make it onto our couch, so to speak. We have to go out into spaces, mm-hmm. let people know that we are nice, normal folks to interact with. This is somebody you'd speak with on the phone. This is what it would be like. I'd be willing to make that call with you if you want to try it out. Mm-hmm. But it really has to do, I think, with integrating it into routine and ritual and culture. Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing that was great is the stigma's gone down, so the demand has gone up. And that's a good problem for us to have, that we're approachable and we're acceptable and people want counseling. What I think we're also going to need to do now is educate better on what the different levels of care are and understanding that crisis services or a 24-hour facility might be the best thing for your situation. Counseling might be the best thing for your situation. Brief or solution-focused counseling might be the best thing for your situation, or group counseling might be the best thing for your situation. And this is what we have in stock, and this is where you can get immediate access, or this is where there might be a little bit longer of a wait.
That's great. I one point I want to make out of that is that I didn't realize that I know about 988, but I didn't realize that if I was witnessing or experiencing something with someone else, that might be a resource for me to call and learn how to help or coach or whatever.
Yeah, it's a common misconception. And because it's the suicide and crisis lifeline, a lot of people will associate it with that first word that I can only call if I'm having suicidal thoughts or someone I care about. But it is crisis lifeline. So it is for any and every self-defined crisis that you want to call and ask some questions. Our folks internally refer to themselves as the Google of our community or the Google of our organization, because they're able to point people in the right direction and the right level of care that they might need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. We will underscore that in the show notes so that people understand that is just a helpline, basically, for us, for anyone.
Yes,
for all of us to learn, too. Right. In my mind, I'm visualizing, where are these 988 people sitting? Are there centers all across the nation? Is there one big center and that is where all the phone calls are handled?
Great question. So there are centers across the nation identified in each state. And right now, it is not geo-mapped. And so what that means is, when you call or text 988, because you can do either, it will go to the center that is associated with the area code on your device. So if I've got 417 or Southwest Missouri, that will end up going to the Burl crisis team.
Okay.
If I am living in a different state and I text, it will also go to my area code's crisis team.
Okay.
Nationally, they are working on geo mapping and hope one day to be able to route based on where you're located at that time. That's just not live in this current phase.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Got
okay.
it.
Yeah, good to know. So I want to break down some of the things you mentioned. You have lots of different, a smorgasbord of offerings at Burl. So let's break those down. Talk to us about group counseling and all those different things that you mentioned.
Absolutely. So, you know, the ones that you'll probably hear the most frequently about are counseling or therapy, mm-hmm. Psychiatry or medication management, community support services, where we've got folks that are direct care professionals going out into the home and working with folks and into the community and working with folks in the community space, which some research will say youth in particular, some youth in particular might appreciate a little better than the therapy room setting. And so mm-hmm. we like to have a diversified portfolio there of things mm-hmm. that allow people to feel engaged, connected, and safe in what they're participating in. And then we have, you know, I'll go into some of the subspecialties, but we also have recovery services. So for substance use disorders, we've got a whole suite of services that are recovery based. Mm-hmm. Also have housing services. We have an ADHD focus clinic, an autism center that just opened its second location here this year.
Wow.
Children's day treatment is another. Connection center is a term you'll hear. That's our walk-in center. So if during business hours I'm ready to have my initial appointment to start my journey, I'll go into the connection center and be seen that day by a professional. I may be leaving off a few there, but those are probably some of the key players here locally.
Okay.
Let me say one more. School-based services is another big one that I don't want to leave out, where we've got professionals that are located in school settings and can pull kiddos out to do therapy there in the schools.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
It's so amazing. Yeah. No. Just hearing about all the legs of your services is helpful for us to hear, because you never know in anybody's career and job that they hold that their coworker or their neighbor or is going to mention, you know, I'm really struggling with my child who I think has ADHD, mm-hmm. or, you know, I know he's autistic, I just don't know what my resources are out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think just hearing that helps mm-hmm. us have knowledge of, well, you need to call Burl, you know, mm-hmm. I know that they have resources for you. I think that's an important thing for all of us to mm-hmm. hear.
And, you know, we love partnerships. And so if it's something that we don't have, we want to get you connected to someone else mm-hmm. that might. We're a community mental health center, and we are very passionate about the community's health. And so mm-hmm. while we might have a lot of entrees on the buffet, we also work really, really closely with our other partners in town. And that's the goal, is let's get people where they need to be and where they're willing to participate, so we can try to improve our public health here in town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How long have you had a presence, and by that I could mean Burl, I could mean mental health professionals, had a presence in our schools?
I think this iteration of school-based services, it started not long after I was there. So I think probably this robust version of it across our counties is about 6 years old at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I know it wasn't in there when Angie and I were in high school, and we often interview people that, you know, it's something relative to what's happening today in a mm-hmm. school environment or a work environment. And, you know, there's a lot of us that was years ago, and it's so great to hear that my grandchildren mm-hmm. coming into a public school system will have some sort of on staff care should they need it, you know, mm-hmm. and it's just really great to hear that we've progressed to that, mm-hmm. which we should have, you know, but it, you know, everything takes time and cultures change and need to change over time. So it's really
great that it's acceptable and even, you know, steadfastly pursued by schools and understanding the importance that this can have in terms of student well-being, their academic performance. I mean, just the outcomes are phenomenal mm-hmm. In terms of that early intervention. I had the same experience. You know, I don't recall, you know, I was thinking on the way over, was there any training in my school years about mental health. I don't remember it being discussed. Mm-hmm. And we were at a conference, actually, a few of us last week, and Jody Sweeten was one of the keynote speakers. That's Stephanie Tanner from Full House. And so she was talking about she's rewatching Full House, and there's an episode where she goes to counseling after an earthquake. And I was like, we were all watching TGIF back in the day. I don't remember that either. I don't remember us talking about that as a family. So I think there were some efforts happening out there, but I don't know, you know, that it was like drinking from a fire hose like it is now, where there's so much, it's almost that we need to distill down and how to digest that information that's out there, what's relevant to us. But to go back to that last question, what do we do about it? We integrate it into our culture as as the norm. Our group goes, we integrate zero suicide initiatives into our agency. A lot of agencies in the state do. It's a framework to try to do better identification, better staff training, and ultimately save more lives. And one of the things they talk about in that professional group is mental health vital signs. So I really like that key term, because if you think about it, if you're like me, when I go to my medical doctor appointments, there's a few things that happen at the beginning of the appointment that I don't think twice about, because it's always been there. I get my weight, my height, blood pressure, pulse, all of these things, and you go, and you're not questioning why they're asking you those things. And then sometimes when they get to the mental health questions, you can tell that the provider's feeling a little awkward, or, you know, just not quite sure how to navigate. And I think when we get to that point of this is part of the norm, we're screening for this on a regular basis, and we know what to do next whenever we get those answers to those questions, you know, we'll be heading in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, I like the fact that you've used the word preventative several times, because I have friends now who are having their children go to counselors in a divorce situation, whereas I don't know that that was prevalent 10, 15 years ago. I'm just hearing almost every one of my friends who is currently going through a divorce is sending their children, or they're going with their children, they're doing family counseling or whatever. So are you seeing more of that in terms of in your day-to-day, are you seeing more of that? I know I'm seeing it from my perspective, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, we're seeing more of it. And again, I feel like it's not enough. I mean, I think it's something that we're going to have to continue. I don't know if we'll have a finish line if we've done too much prevention. I would love to see what that conversation looks like, if that exists. So more of it, definitely. And I think, you know, the other thing that we have a responsibility as the providers in those situations is to make sure that we have good education on what the therapy experience is going to be, even if it's a preventative experience. And so, you know, a lot of what at least I knew before I went to grad school about therapy was what I read in books and saw on TV, and that's not how it always happens. Especially in a lot of movies. The list of bad therapists is longer than the list of good therapists in movies, I think. Maybe we'll balance that out at some point. But in understanding that, you know, outpatient therapy, so if we're not going to higher levels of care in inpatient or partial hospitalization settings, really should have a conclusion. And it might be a chapter, so you might have another chapter in your book where you restart therapy again for a few sessions, but one thing that I think we probably don't talk about enough is when you start therapy, you should be planning to achieve your goals and have a discharge for that chapter. And for some folks, solution-focused interventions are really, really effective, and you might only need 2 or 5 or 8 sessions. For other folks, you know, you see positive effects in that like 13 to 20 range. And then there are, of course, situations with trauma and other more deep work needs that could go a little bit longer than that. But I think, you know, if you're in a situation where you're not talking about that, one, advocate for yourself and ask your therapist, what are those goals and when are we going to get those done? And can I have a feedback loop, please, on my progress? As clients, we can become discouraged in that process if we don't know what the light at the end of the tunnel looks like or that one exists at all. And then it ends up being bad for everybody, because I might be doing really well. I'm like, well, I don't really know what conclusion looks like, so I'm just going to cancel the rest of my appointments. But I actually made progress. That therapist, meanwhile, is thinking, like, I failed. I didn't do well, and we never had a chance to have closure there. But if we're talking about that, we can have a reasonable conclusion on when I can go be independent with these skills and these accomplishments I've had in therapy, and when I can call back. So call if you need us. So those preventative, right. To go back to the original question, it may only be a couple of sessions where we go in and say, like, let's set up some resiliency factors for you. You may not need to be in counseling throughout this entire life changer event. And that's up to the professional, that family, to figure out when they're together. But I think going in and not answering that question by yourself on Google and getting that feedback, and you might get that prescription, a recommendation of, kiddo seems to be doing really, really well right now, actually, and adjusting well. Let's do a session or two to make sure they've got the skills to continue to be resilient, and then come back to us if those start to falter. Or no, maybe they need a few sessions to build some more resiliency skills during this, or they're really dealing with some anxiety and depression during this process, and they need to work on their attachment. But we don't know if we don't go to that first session and get that feedback.
That's right.
You know, I think that a lot of people feel like if they take that first step, it's never ending. It's from a financial standpoint and a time commitment standpoint. I think people hesitate just because they don't know. The unknown is scary, right? They don't know what they're getting into. So I'd love to underscore that point that there should be an end in sight, whether it's two sessions or 10 sessions, or we're going to evaluate, always knowing where you're at, that there is an end to this potentially. So
yeah, we want to succeed as humans, right? Usually we've got some dissonance if somebody says that we're failing at something or we're questioning whether we're doing good. So why don't we do each other a favor and make sure we're providing good feedback on what we need to do to get to that goal and what that finish line looks like for each of us, because it's going to be different.
Yeah.
What are your types of group therapy? Why would someone want to partake in group therapy?
Good question. So we have a lot of them right now, at least in our region. We have over 50, I last checked, of different topics for youth and adults. And this is another area where I feel like we will need to continue to provide some education. So I think while stigma went down on individual counseling, and, and this is sort of a cheesy reference, but somebody compared therapy now, it's cooler than cats on the internet. But I think that's true of individual therapy, and maybe family therapy, but less so yet on group therapy. Again, there's not always accurate portrayals of group therapy on television.
Right.
Sometimes we get a window into what a support group would look like. There's a lot of AANA, Al-Anon references on in the media. Some are great. Some are, you know, maybe a little embellished. And group therapy is a little bit different than each of those, you know, a little bit different than education or support group or AANA, where you are pursuing some treatment plan goals like you would in individual counseling. And so why a person might go, I'd say, you know, if you looked back 5 years, 10 years, it was probably more often than not in textbooks and literature described or even trained by supervisors as supplement or augment to your individual. So like we're working on these things in individual, let's say maybe it's social skills, and let's get you in the social skills group so you can practice that in a safe therapeutic setting with other folks working on the same thing. More and more of the research that's coming out is describing group as effective as individual therapy for many of the more common concerns that folks go into therapy for. And so why a person might go to group now is because it is in stock and has more immediate access than the other product on the shelf in most communities. And so, you know, another comparison that one of our providers has shared, which I think translates here as, you know, a physician might prescribe an intervention for your pain. And let's say for your situation, it could be a cream that you rub on, or a patch, or some pain pill medication. And that prescriber, that provider might say that any of these will achieve the same end result for your situation. It is really your choice as a consumer which one you want to use. And one might be in stock, the other might be on the truck that's coming to the store, and the other one might be on the plane that's headed to the truck. So one might be more immediate to you as a consumer, and you could choose to wait for the one that you like, or you could try the one that's there on the shelf. And I think right now, at least for our Southwest Missouri community, group therapy is the method of administration that is in stock on the shelf and has immediate access routine individual therapy, so not for emergent services, which we can talk about too. So if they're emergency services, we do have a crisis center and other immediate access pathways there. So for routine, there may be a longer wait than to get into group therapy. For a lot of folks, it might be something that they're hesitant about just because it's unfamiliar. Mm-hmm. The idea that I just got enough courage to be willing to try individual counseling for the first time, and now you're saying I need to go do that with up to 10 other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could be daunting for a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we, you know, again, as professionals in our industry, we have a responsibility to make sure everybody understands the education around groups. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is also a confidential service. And so when you're in there with a trained group facilitator, they set up rules and parameters for confidentiality and privacy, mm-hmm. for just like individual therapy, things to stay in the room, you know, that don't warrant, you know, report outs, and maintaining that good group cohesion and collective space. And so not unlike calling 988, if you haven't had that experience, you might need that first experience to have relief on this could be the way for me to get immediate treatment and immediate relief, because it's efficient. Mm-hmm. We can serve more people in a group with one professional that would otherwise be seeing just one person with that same amount of time. It's effective. And like I said, the research says that the outcomes for many conditions and symptoms are equivalent to individual therapy.
Mm-hmm. How would one see a list of what your group therapies are?
Yeah, right now, there are some links on our website that will get you to some of the flagship descriptions. Okay. But in truth, you know, we are looking at right now the best way to communicate 50 products on the shelf to mm-hmm. the community. So if you call in, you know, we can walk through and talk through those. Or if you come to our connection center for your initial appointment, they can go through all the different options that might apply mm-hmm. to you. Okay. Let's say if you're there to treat some anxiety symptoms, this is the subsection of anxiety groups that we have. Or depressive symptoms, this is the subsection that we have for youth with depressive symptoms. So right now it would happen in that engagement, and we're looking for opportunities to make sure that we can fully communicate that to help with normalizing that to mm-hmm. the community at large.
I think that's an important point, because I don't think that I've ever thought of group therapy to be something you're normalizing, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, the AA reference that you made, I think, you know, in movies and with people we might know that they've attended something like that, that's mm-hmm. really all my mind goes to mm-hmm. when I think of group therapy. Yeah. But my gosh, how impactful that could be, either for the person that is more scared of the individual therapy and thinks, I want to go sit among some peers that, you know, suck at this just like I do, mm-hmm. you know, or suffering from this just like I am. Mm-hmm. It might provide, you know, a walk into normalizing that behavior a little bit.
Yeah, it's immediate connection, because there's screening. You know, you don't just enroll in any group.
Sure.
There's mm-hmm. screening to for goodness of fit and appropriateness, and typically you're in a group with a title and a description that matches needs of other people that are in that room mm-hmm. with you. Mm-hmm. And so
that's great.
You know, at least for treatment groups, it's not going to be more than 10 folks plus a therapist. And you mentioned recovery. Recovery and substance use, they've been doing groups forever. And so when we talk about, you know, normalizing groups in outpatient and non-recovery therapy, you know, we sometimes get the feedback, but we've been doing this for many years, and it is very normalized in substance use treatment, but mm-hmm. not so much mm-hmm. in co-occurring or non-substance use treatment. We encourage folks to, you know, enlist a friend. You know, if somebody can go with you to that group, just like you're more likely probably to go to the gym if somebody is willing mm-hmm. to work out with you, mm-hmm. And have them tag along. Typically with youth groups, we try to include a parent component. So there's something that the parent would be working on while the youth is in group. And that also, you know, if youth can't drive, helps, you know, if a parent can come and everybody's got a commitment and a responsibility there. But yeah, anything you can do to get there and not have to do it alone. Once you get in the group, then you find out you're not alone. And there is that connection point, and there are other people dealing with the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, the Surgeon General has talked a lot about the epidemic of loneliness. I don't know if you all talked about that on the last episode or not, but the research shows chronic social isolation or in long-term social isolation actually can shorten our lifespans. And mm-hmm. so the more that we can become comfortable with community-based events and group events, we're actually doing ourselves a favor in terms of having a longer and probably higher quality of life.
Yeah. I recently met with a client whose parent had to go into a assisted living facility for health reasons. And so we were talking about just his overall well-being prior to going into this facility. And his wife died 2 years ago. And so loneliness crept in, wouldn't leave the house, wasn't social, didn't want to do anything. And so his health has deteriorated immensely in 2 years. But I asked, so how is he doing in the facility? And she said, amazing.
Yeah.
He's joining in all the social events, and he's doing all the things that he had the capability to do. He just would have had to have left his house to get there, you know, to drive there or to go do those things. So that's just a small example of what, you know, how that can enrich our lives and hopefully lengthen it.
Yeah,
absolutely. And the quality.
Absolutely. And we're going to reach a point pretty soon where there are more adults than youth in our country. We think 2030 is that year with baby boomer generation aging and less babies being born in the younger generation, and making sure there are ample opportunities for folks to connect in the way they want to if they're over the age of 55. That there's education there. It's a group that will sometimes be accused with the stereotype of being less inclined to participate in therapy because there was maybe even less education about it when they were going through school, or you know, the sort of lift yourself up by your bootstraps type of an attitude and don't show any weakness. And so we've actually been working with senior age and the senior centers to make sure that we are also helping customize projects for them and helping normalize in those environments mental health seeking, again, getting it very visible, having summits and events to bring folks out to just for those opportunities for connection because they can be hope-giving and life-saving.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. With the just in every piece of our healthcare system, mental health professionals, there's a lack of them currently. We are struggling across the board in healthcare. Is there a reason why I would choose a counselor versus a psychologist?
Great question, and a good myth to talk about. And so I'm a psychologist. Let me preface it with that. So I went to school for a couple extra years, a couple extra student loans perhaps. And I'm very proud of what I did. And the research says that the best outcomes are associated with the quality of your relationship with the provider, not the license that they have and not the degree that they have. And so a person in either category, LPC, social worker, psychologist, they may have specialty training that attracts you to work with them more so than the other person. But what it really comes down to when you're participating is, do you feel safe? Do you feel comfortable? Is there trust here? Like, can you and that therapist move the ball down the field together as a team? Not the letters behind their name. As much as I would love for that to be the case, going to grad school a few more years, it is really about the quality of the relationship.
And I've had different things happen in my life that I've been to numerous different therapists or counselors, and they were all so different and all had such different, probably I could say, backgrounds and also therapies involved in the counseling that I went through. So I'm not ashamed to say that. And and it they are all very different, no matter what the letters are behind their name.
It's good to and I think another area where we can continue to improve education, how do you advocate for yourself in your mental health care visit, in your wellness visit? What are the questions that we should be asking? Are we educating, you know, again, youth or all ages? When and why would you call 911? When and why would you call 988? But yeah, understanding as the person in that situation that you have rights and you're entitled to good treatment and you might have specific needs, and it's okay to ask those questions and bring those up and have a mature conversation. If it's not a good fit, we are talking about your wellness. Let's also have a mature conversation about, do I need to get transferred to a different provider? And everybody not take that personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
true.
Just like a medical doctor. Do I need a second opinion? Do I need to speak to someone differently? And I think you're right. I'm not going to open up to someone I don't feel completely comfortable with and feel like I'm in capable hands. So you have to be your own advocate.
Yeah, it's about finding that balance of if it's you finally got the courage to go in there, giving it a couple of sessions, whatever the couple of sessions might mean for you to feel like this is a trusting and safe space. You know, you may or may not make that after the first session. You know, give yourself a chance and kind of figure out where you're at. Another study comes to mind talking about finally building up the courage. At some point some years ago, there was research that came out on how long do people wait, I think it was adults at the time, after they mentally acknowledge that they have what they think is a therapy need or a mental health need, and then the moment they actually go and pursue that. Depending on the research, it was years, plural. Mm-hmm. Some research was saying as many as 5 years when I identify I might need this, and then me actually walking in the door for that appointment.
Wow.
And so I think if, and hopefully we continue to shorten that, but truly if you've waited that long for this moment, make sure to make the most of it and know that, you know, you have rights and you're entitled to figure out what you're doing there and a copy of what your treatment plan goals are. And, you know, we're here to do some work. And so it is a partnership and a relationship.
For sure.
That's great.
So for our listeners to understand how quickly they can be seen, so if they have a crisis and they're not necessarily using the 988 number, they could, but they're just dialing Burl Health on a day that they feel panicked over however they're feeling. How quickly can they expect to maybe be seen or be talking to someone?
So if it's something where I'm calling in to the community mental health center rather than 988, and I feel like I am in crisis, they will likely next be bringing up that we have a behavioral health crisis center. And there are many throughout the state of Missouri. So I understand listeners are from all over the place, and there are many throughout the country, actually. So behavioral health crisis centers have really started popping up in the last probably 3 years, 4 years or so. We have several across the state of Missouri. Some are urgent care models where they're open extended business hours, and some are 24-hour models. So in Springfield, Burl has a 24-hour model that I can walk into at any time of the day as an adult if I believe that I'm in crisis. And again, self-defined.
Sure.
And that could be for a number of reasons. And you would get a chance to meet with professionals there in the building. So we've got behavioral health technicians, peer support specialists, which is a role for individuals who've got some certification but also lived experience, which offers a really unique way to connect with individuals where they're at. And then we also have some physicians and counselors in that building to help with stabilization of that event. Those centers are also designed to be diversion places for both law enforcement and emergency departments. So their goal is not just to be a community service for crisis 24 hours a day, at least in our community, 24 hours a day, but also for those situations that really don't need to be handled by a law enforcement agent so that they can go do law enforcement stuff in the community. They can bring folks to us in our crisis center, and we'll work on those behavioral health needs. We've got mobile units that also can go out and we'll partner with law enforcement. And then similarly, when BHCCs were not available, a lot of folks may only have known to go to the emergency department for their mental health needs, and that may have made the wait longer for other medical or physical emergencies. EDs are not always, not everyone is equipped with a mental health response team or enough staff to handle all of them for the community. So again, the goal is for those that are very mental health forward or crisis forward, for those to come into the crisis center so the EDs can do ED stuff and law enforcement can do community law enforcement stuff. And then we'll take the behavioral health stuff.
Gotcha.
That's a great answer. Yeah, and good to know.
As we start to wrap up here, is there anything we haven't touched on that you feel like our listeners really need to be aware of?
You know, I think if you are in doubt or hesitant or where do I begin, reach out to somebody and let them know. I'm interested in this, but I don't know where to start.
Right.
If you don't have that someone, you can call 988. Hey, I'm interested in figuring out my wellness plan or people that I care about. Mm-hmm. What do I do next? Mm-hmm. Or I work at a company. I'd like to help my workforce, but I don't know what to do. You can also mm-hmm. reach out to us for that. You know, we're happy to provide direction or even provide that help. So I would say even after hearing this or any other, you know, conversation about mental health, if you're still confused, reach out to somebody. Yeah. They may also be confused, and then together you can go ask the next
right.
person. But I think it's just important, you know, because there is so much emphasis on the demand is high and there may be less providers for individual routine services than mm-hmm. we would all like right now. And we are catching up and we're creating programs to create more. But there are lots of other levels of care that might be just right mm-hmm. for you. But we have to start those conversations to figure mm-hmm. out if that's the case.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hope is then that it becomes more and more normalized and we understand how to make the best use of telehealth and technology to get access yeah. when and where we need it and at the level that we need. I know you had mentioned didn't get the education. I don't think, you know, I did either in schooling and part of that curiosity and role models in my life who were doing a lot of outreach and a lot of giving. So I have yeah. a dad that's a contractor, a mom that's a drafter, a lot of teachers and other people in the family who mm-hmm. I think unconsciously were, you know, influencing me to also give back in some
yeah.
way and be involved in the community in some way, plus yeah. a curiosity for myself. You know, how do I understand others and myself more and communicate better and listen better? And having to go and going on that journey, but choosing to go on that
yeah.
journey. And so I credit a lot of those folks and now credit great team members that I have for continuing to embody those traits and inspire me every day.
Yeah.
But you do have to make a conscious choice to make this a normal part of your routine, and we're here to support if that's something that you're willing to do. I think when we were talking the other day, I was super proud when we were sitting down for family dinner. I have a 6-year-old, and I think recently maybe we had gone to lunch or something and he stayed with Nana. I don't remember what the circumstances were, but I know he was kind of upset and he stopped us and said, "Mom, Dad, I want you to know that I was feeling sad before because I missed you guys." And I was like, "Oh yeah, like you identified it, you nailed it,
right.
you did an awesome job. I don't think right. I could have done that when I was 6 years
right.
old."
Yeah.
And that's not just because we talk about it in the home, but because I think in society we're
yes.
talking about it more,
mm-hmm.
and the schools are talking about it more, and has kindergarten and first grade, and that
yes.
is great. I really am looking forward to that continuing
yeah.
because, again, it's going to be something that you can't win the game and stop. We're going to continue to play
mm-hmm.
And it's continue to do this work.
Yeah.
yeah.
And if children
yeah.
are learning that at such a young age, he's got really good parents to talk through that. But
mm-hmm.
if he's learning that in school, and we can look forward to my grandchildren learning that when they're in preschool and kindergarten and whatever, it, you know, that just makes a good society, a great society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's hope there. And, you know, one thing some neuroscientists did when they studied the brain, they figured out why, you know, what does hope have to do with all of this actually?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you took psychology 101, hope was something that probably got brought up, you know, unconditional mm-hmm. positive regard and hope and these things. Well, hope for most people will stimulate the release of dopamine, and dopamine
mm-hmm.
Allows us to feel pleasure. We, in most cases, have to have dopamine to feel motivated,
mm-hmm.
and we have to be motivated to want to try something different. And if we don't try something different, we won't become resilient. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that continued focus on resilient factors, resiliency factors, protective factors, risk factors are great, and it's good for us to monitor those and be aware
mm-hmm.
of those, but also making sure that we're balancing that out with the positive stuff too.
For sure. Yeah. That's great. That's
a great note to end on.
It is.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you so much
for the conversation. And Tanya, I've learned so much through these conversations we've been having, and I hope our listeners have some great takeaways as well. I think bottom line, there's help if you need it, and just you don't need to be timid about asking for it or reaching out, because it is a safe space. If you know someone who needs to hear some of the messaging you heard today, please share our episode. And like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, thank you, Gershman Mortgage, for recording us today, and we will catch you guys next time.
See ya. Thanks for listening to the Simply Authentic Podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
Be sure to listen to us on your favorite podcasting app.